This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. It's been called the triple-demic. Cases of the flu and a respiratory virus called RSV are increasing as people continue to get infected with COVID-19. So what does this mean for us here in Greater Cincinnati? Joining me to discuss just that are Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Chief of Staff, Dr. Patty Manning. Welcome, Dr. Manning.
Thank you.
And American Academy of Pediatrics Ohio Chapter President, Dr. Chris Peltier of Pediatric Associates of Mount Carmel. Thanks for being here, Dr. Peltier.
Thanks for having us, Lucy.
If you have questions or comments, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. So nationally, flu and RSV infections are unusually high. What are we seeing here, Dr. Manning?
Well, we are seeing incredibly high volumes of children presenting to our urgent cares, our emergency departments, and our primary care offices who are sick with some very nonspecific symptoms. And so it can be hard to distinguish what's going on, especially initially when a child just starts with congestion or a fever, sore throat, cough. For the past several weeks, we've been seeing very high rates of children with RSV, testing positive for RSV, and now shifting in the past couple of weeks to very high and rapidly rising rates of flu positivity.
And Dr. Peltier, this RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, tell us more about what that is.
Sure. So RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus, is a very, very common respiratory virus that affects essentially children. And although we're seeing early peak of RSV and really heavy numbers right now, this is not something that is new. I've been in practice for 25 years, and RSV has been around well before that. Every winter, we deal with this. When a child gets the virus, it initially presents with some what we would call upper respiratory symptoms. So maybe some nasal congestion, maybe a little bit of mild cough, maybe some low-grade fever. And oftentimes, that is all that children will get. Where children start to have problems and where kids really get sick is when it moves into the lower respiratory tract, into the lungs. And that is a clinical condition that we call bronchiolitis. And that causes lots of increased secretions in the lungs, which causes babies to wheeze, to breathe rapidly and breathe fast. It sometimes can cause some decrease in oxygen levels. And that's when we really need to think about, does the child need to go to Cincinnati Children's to be evaluated or potentially be admitted for either respiratory support or dehydration? Typically, kids up to you are at greatest risk of getting RSV. Most of us in our life have been exposed. So older kids and adults typically don't get RSV because we're protected. But the population that we really worry about are premature infants and babies with underlying medical conditions like congenital heart disease or cystic fibrosis.
And are you seeing a lot more of these serious RSV cases in your practice as a pediatrician?
So I would say we're not seeing more serious infections. I think it's probably the same as the previous several years. I think the biggest unique thing right now is that it's really spiking a little bit early. Typically, we don't see the peak of RSV season until January, February, and it's really started hitting, you know, this fall while we're seeing an unusually high number of early flu cases. And, you know, you did mention the triple-demic, right? So the third piece of this puzzle is COVID, which although numbers are not nearly where they were, in the past couple of years, we still are seeing, you know, nationally 20,000 cases of COVID in children. And we are starting to see nationally a slight uptick in hospitalizations of young children that are COVID positive.
Well, and Dr. Manning, I just talked to one of my neighbors who said his baby grandchild had the triple whammy, COVID, RSV, and the flu all at once somehow, was in the hospital for a few days. Talk to us about how those three things are interacting and affecting children.
Well, yeah, that's sort of an unfortunate circumstance, isn't it, that as a young baby, you could get all three. But theoretically, because they're all circulating, as Chris shared, and they're all, some of these levels are quite high right now for RSV and flu, and they can be carried by well-intentioned relatives who might not be that sick or might even be asymptomatic. but they want to see a baby, they can transmit not just one, but two or even three viruses. And so throughout the entire pandemic, I have we've talked about the fact that kids thankfully didn't seem to be as significantly impacted by COVID as they are as older adults or individuals with underlying health conditions. But kids can still get sick from COVID, and it can't it's never a good thing when you have more than one virus. It means that they could be causing you to have additional symptoms that you might not have had otherwise. It's not necessarily critically important to distinguish which virus is going on, especially if you're only mildly sick. But if you're more seriously sick, it is important for us to know what we're dealing with. And as I've said many times, why would you want your baby, your grandbaby, your niece, your nephew in your life to have not one of these viruses, but more than one of them? Why wouldn't you do everything in your power to protect those children from these viruses?
We're talking about this year's flu season and how it's complicated by COVID and RSV cases with Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Chief of Staff Dr. Patty Manning and American Academy of Pediatrics Ohio Chapter President Dr. Chris Peltier of Pediatric Associates of Mount Carmel. Dr. Peltier, talk to us. I've read a lot that COVID has really affected the seasonal patterns of these other viruses, these other respiratory infections. You mentioned that we've got earlier onset of the flu and RSV. Talk to us about how COVID has impacted the timing of all this.
It's a great question, Lucy. And I don't know if we completely understand that yet. You know, we're just really entering our third year into this pandemic COVID experience. But I do think, you know, one of the things that researchers and experts are hypothesizing is that when early on in the pandemic, with shutting down of schools, people not going into work, wearing masks, that it really did decrease the amount of illness that we were seeing both in our offices, and I'm sure that Dr. Manning's colleagues were seeing at Cincinnati Children's. So, you know, you have a cohort of young children that were not exposed to RSV like they would have had they been going to daycare, had they been going out shopping with their parents. So now all of a sudden you have RSV and flu immune young children that are now exposed to these viruses. And so you just have a greater number of children that I think are sort of eligible in a sense of getting these infections. Mm-hmm.
I want to remind you, you can join our conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Manning, what's the impact of this triple-demic on local hospitals, on Cincinnati Children's in particular?
Well, it's been quite significant. I mean, I'm checking our hospital census and our emergency room volumes literally every hour at times because it's quite overwhelming when everybody gets sick at the same time. And people will sometimes say, well, the flu's not that serious or RSV isn't that serious unless you're a baby. And that might be a fair statement. But the problem is, and we saw this with COVID, when everybody gets sick at the same time, or a lot of people get sick at the same time, then a percentage of those people or those children are going to get very sick. And they're going to need to be hospitalized or get supportive care. And we need to be able to respond to that as an emergency department or an urgent care or primary care office. And it's, you know, there's only so much our system can handle. And on top of that, as we're all well aware, we've talked about many times, the healthcare system in general has really struggled coming, you know, during the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic, if that's in fact the case, in terms of staffing and staff who were just very burnt out and exhausted from the chronicity of what we've been dealing with in taking care of sick people and sick children. And so we're feeling it. And I know that some in the audience might say, well, you say you've been feeling it for 2 or 3 years now. And things have been challenging in waves, and we're in a very tough wave right now for sure.
I've heard about other hospitals, especially children's hospitals in other parts of the country, who've run low on beds even to put all the sick children who are coming in. Is Cincinnati Children's facing any of that?
You know, we are so fortunate to be a very large children's hospital, the largest in the state, and really in a tri-state region. And we are and one of the largest hospitals really in the country. And we actually just expanded just a little over a year ago. We expanded the size of our intensive care units and our emergency department, and that has helped us. We have had to open overflow units, and we have had to open overflow clinics to help our emergency department and our urgent care. And so we have had to do some of the things that other hospitals have done to deal with the volumes. I would say that we've generally been in better shape than some hospitals because of our size, but we have definitely had to employ some mitigation strategies to meet the demand that we're currently facing.
Lucy, could I add a point to that?
Please do, yes.
So Patty's correct. We are very lucky to have Cincinnati Children's here. But in other parts of the state, especially some of the smaller communities, one of the issues that we're seeing both in Ohio as well as across the country are that sort of community hospitals that traditionally have most of their beds for adults and may have a ward or part of a ward with a few beds for pediatrics. We've seen a disturbing trend over the last couple of years that for many reasons, those hospitals have decided to close those pediatric beds, which means then local communities don't have beds in their local hospitals for children that need hospitalization and then have to go to one of the, you know, first off, travel farther away to a tertiary center like Cincinnati Children's or one of the other hospitals in Columbus or Cleveland. And it just kind of puts a strain on the entire system.
And Dr. Peltier, I know this is a little bit outside of your wheelhouse because you have enough to worry about, but do you have a feel for what the impact has been on local schools with all these sick kids?
Yeah, I haven't looked at data from sort of school outages, but I do know I've heard anecdotally from seeing patients in my office that when I ask my families, has anybody been sick at school? And, you know, almost uniformly, the parents are like, oh, yeah, half my son's class was out today with illness. So it definitely is impacting school attendance. And of course, as we know, you know, obviously school performance when you can't be in school.
Sure. We'll continue our conversation about this year's flu season in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll discuss a charitable pharmacy that's looking to expand. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We continue our conversation about this year's flu season and how it's complicated by COVID and RSV cases with Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Chief of Staff, Dr. Patty Manning, and American Academy of Pediatrics Ohio Chapter President, Dr. Chris Peltier of Pediatric Associates of Mount Carmel. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Dr. Manning, can you talk to us about who's most likely to be the most affected by this triple-demic? Are we talking about the very young, the very old? Who are the people most at risk?
It's a great question, and we're probably talking about both, right? Oftentimes with different infectious diseases, we're worried about the most vulnerable in our society. So that tends to be the elderly, the very young, individuals who have other underlying conditions, whether those are developmental disabilities or chronic health conditions, and sometimes even pregnant women fall into that category. But for these respiratory viruses and flu virus specifically, we're worried about the elderly and we're worried about the very young. And as Dr. Peltier said earlier, we're worried about children, babies who were formerly premature, who might have other underlying conditions like asthma, other breathing problems, airway problems, but especially the very young babies. Those are always the most troubling for us because when they're very young, when you're under 2 months and you have a fever or you can't breathe and you can't eat, it's hard. It's very hard to be a baby with a stuffy nose and a fever. We take that very seriously and we're going to watch you very closely.
We do have a couple callers on the line. Reza, thank you so much for calling. What is your question or comment?
Hey, guys, I appreciate the program. So the question I got a 5-year-old and 8-year-old, and both of them are impacted with this RSV flu. It's been a hard month for me and my wife. The question I got, can we do as a parent, can we do anything at all to, like, you know, for their immune system, like, you know, give them constantly orange juice, or what sort of a recommendation you guys have?
And it sounds like both your children had their flu shots. Is that right?
Yes, both of them got it. Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Dr. Peltier, do you have any advice for about these two kids?
I do. First off, I'm very sorry that your children have been sick. I know as a parent that is hard to watch and to deal with. So, yeah, there definitely are a few things that we can do. And Lucy referenced one of them, right? So number one, making sure that you're up to date on all of your vaccines. There currently is not a vaccine for RSV. There have been many, many attempts, and I think we're getting closer. I've seen some recent news that there may be one in the next year or two. But definitely, we know that kids 6 months and above can get vaccinated against influenza as well as COVID. You know, unfortunately, there really isn't a magic pill to help boost somebody's immune system. You know, while I would, you know, definitely say, you know, sort of eating a well-balanced diet and making sure you're getting sort of fruits and vegetables with minerals and vitamins. But honestly, I think the most important things people can do are many of the things that we learned during the pandemic. So frequent washing of hands. And then just some common sense things. If you are sick or your children are sick, stay home. Don't send your child to school, definitely with a fever. You know, if you have questions about whether your child should be sent to school or not, call your pediatrician or your primary care provider. We're here to sort of talk to you and sort of help you sort of with that assessment.
Thank you so much for your call. I hope the month goes better for you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. We also have Dr. Sawyer on the line. Thank you so much for calling, Dr. Sawyer. What is your question or comment?
So actually, my comment is just like Dr. Peltier said, hand washing. So as we're all facing these increasing respiratory infections of all sorts, this National Hand Washing Awareness Week happens to be December 4th through 10th, started in Cincinnati in 1999 during the first flu vaccine shortage. Very successful. The whole community, hospitals, schools were washing their hands candidly and using Henry the Hand as an icon, as you all have heard. So let's triple our efforts to prevent a triple-demic, so to speak, because we're all tired of seeing sick patients, and they're tired of being sick as well, as the previous caller had mentioned. So let's promote this. What do you all think?
Thanks so much, Dr. Sawyer. That makes sense to me. I remember Henry the Hand. I don't know if you remember that, Dr. Peltier, or Dr. Manning, but Henry the Hand, he was a big deal a few years ago, for sure. Dr. Peltier, what has the impact of these, what's been the strain on doctors? I mean, this is something to have all these sick kids with all these different things floating around all at once. What has this meant for pediatricians?
It's a great question, Lucy. So, you know, in primary care, not only are we here to deal with all of these illnesses that we have seen peak during the last few months, but we also are charged and have the privilege of providing well child visits for all of our children, plus other visits for other illnesses that aren't respiratory illnesses. And one of the things that we haven't mentioned, and Dr. Manning and I have had many conversations and on the strain of this in both our primary care offices as well as Cincinnati Children's, is the number of visits that pediatricians perform every day for mental health issues like ADHD, anxiety, and depression. We know that nationally there was the president declared a mental health emergency for children, and we are definitely seeing that. And so you have a mental health crisis in kids as well as this triple-demic of all these respiratory illnesses. And it's made a strain on our office. So trying to balance, making sure that we have spots to see our well child visits, our mental health follow-ups, our other illnesses that aren't respiratory illnesses, while at the same time making sure that we have bandwidth in our practice to see kids that need to be seen in our office. And I think that's really the key. You know, while we're seeing record number of emergency room and urgent care and pediatrician visits, not every child with a respiratory illness necessarily needs to be seen by a healthcare provider. I think definitely a lot of things can be handled with a phone call to your pediatrician's office, where our nurses or one of our physicians can ask the parent some questions and do some triage over the phone of what's the best appropriate place for your child to receive the right care at the right place at the right time. And that may mean a phone call just over the phone and giving some advice and saying what to watch for. That may mean being seen in a pediatric office, or if it sounds like the child is really having significant issues with breathing or what we would call respiratory distress, that may mean sending them to Cincinnati Children's to the emergency room. But, you know, we definitely don't want families that don't need to either go to the emergency room or an urgent care or sometimes even our office. Although we love to see our kids, we want to make sure we're able to have the bandwidth to provide appropriate care for those that really need it at that time.
Sure. That initial phone call with the nurses was always my favorite go-to when my daughters were little, that's for sure. Dr. Manning, can you talk to us? We just talked about hand washing, how important that is. What are there other things that parents and other adults could and should be doing to protect themselves and the children in their care when it comes to these viruses, these respiratory infections? I'm wondering about sanitizing surfaces. I mean, should we be wearing masks again this winter? We were masking in the winter of 2020 and 2021 for the most part. We're having a worse cold and flu season now. What are some of the other things that we all could and should be doing?
Well, I'll just say a word about masking because we're still masking here at Cincinnati Children's Hospital in our clinical settings and our public settings because we feel so strongly that it is such a good protective intervention. And certainly we're seeing lots of sick kids and we want to keep everybody as healthy as possible. And we learned so much during the pandemic how protective masks can be, not just with COVID, but with RSV and flu, because we saw so little of those illnesses when we were most heavily masked. I think some of these things feel so obvious when you're in healthcare, but they really bear stating out loud because they're not obvious to maybe lots of folks in the general public. And one of those things is that when there's a newborn baby, and by newborn, I mean, you know, a few weeks to a couple months old, you really should be very vigilant about seeing that baby, washing your hands before you hold a baby, and not being around the baby if you have any cold symptoms at all, or minimally wearing a mask. I think that, as I've said before, that's the group we feel so strongly about protecting the most. And at the same time, and you know, this is not my end of the healthcare continuum, but if you're around elderly folks who are vulnerable or people with other underlying conditions that affect their immune system, wash your hands, wear a mask, and just stay away if you're sick. And we've learned a lot in healthcare about not coming to work sick, being very vigilant about screening yourself for symptoms, and not showing up for work if you're actively ill. Those are things we could really be better about probably as a society, and really resisting the urge to be around others when we're sick. It's not rocket science. It's some basic things. We just have to do them regularly.
And Dr. Peltier, what are some of the treatments for these different viruses that we've been talking about? Is there a scarcity of treatment or medications? I understand that there are some monoclonal antibody treatments available for RSV, but that they're only for very young babies. What are treatment options?
A great question, Lucy. So when we're talking about RSV, it's really pretty much supportive care. And honestly, for most of the children with all three of these viruses, the treatment is really symptomatic treatment. What do I mean by that? It means pushing fluids. It means, you know, using nasal saline drops and a bulb suction to sort of clear your baby's nose. And it's monitoring their respiratory status and making sure that they're, you know, having 3 to 4 wet diapers a day. For very children that are extremely sick, you know, with RSV for premature infants, there's a protective passive antibody that is not a treatment. It is really a preventative that can be used in a select population of premature infants. It's a monthly injection that's given during the fall and winter, usually beginning from October through April. It does not treat RSV, but it helps to protect those that are at severe risk. There really isn't any sort of treatment. Many years ago, there was some treatment for RSV, but that no longer is used. And when I'm finished, if Dr. Manning has more information from the hospital setting, I'll let her weigh in. Influenza, same thing, supportive treatment. You know, again, for a certain subset of patients, children under the age of 2, children with asthma, we can use Tamiflu, which is an antiviral. However, Tamiflu, unlike an antibiotic for strep throat, where you will be cured basically within 24 hours, Tamiflu may shorten the length of symptoms, maybe 12 to 24 hours. And there are some neurologic and mental health side effects in children. So we typically do not use Tamiflu for every child with flu. So really, prevention and supportive care are really the mainstay of therapies.
Wow. And I want to ask you this, Dr. Manning. We were talking about the importance of flu shots, the importance of COVID vaccines, all these different vaccines. Are you seeing any hesitancy with people getting flu shots this year, kind of in line with some of the COVID vaccine hesitancy that we've been seeing?
Oh, I can't tell you how badly I wish I could say no to that question, but the answer is yes. We've seen a significant uptick in vaccine hesitancy, I think very much tethered to the concern and I'll just say it, misinformation about the COVID vaccine. And that's probably why we're seeing the incredibly steep spike of flu cases. I think our flu vaccine rates have dropped significantly compared to years prior, very much tied to just general vaccine hesitancy, which is terribly, terribly unfortunate. Hmm.
So, Dr. Peltier, when you look at this whole triple-demic, in your mind, what's the worst case scenario that could happen with this in terms of strain on doctors, healthcare systems, on families?
So I think it's multiple. When you talk about families, right, especially young children, you need to secure childcare. It may mean that you can't go to work, which unfortunately may, I worry, is a parent going to lose their job because that they have to stay home with their sick child? No parent should ever have to decide between, working to take care of their family versus, nobody is able to take care of their sick child and they have to do that. On the healthcare system, I think it's something that we call moral injury, which is sort of a fancy way to say burnout. I know many healthcare workers, nurses, ancillary staff, and physicians that have left healthcare just because of the strain and the stress of the last 3 years. All the things we've talked about, whether it's respiratory illness, whether it's increase in administrative burdens from insurance companies, whether it's dealing with the mental health crisis. And unfortunately, healthcare workers are not immune to also, being suffering from mental health, anxiety, and depression during this. So, and I think all of those, my biggest fear, if I had to boil it down to one, would be that something would happen to a child that for whatever reason we're short-staffed or we can't get a patient in because we're so full, that we would miss seeing a patient that we need to see and something bad happens to that child because for whatever reason we weren't able to see them and take care of them.
Dr. Manning, this has been a very heavy conversation with lots of important information. Is there any note of optimism you can end us with? Is there any kind of dose of hope you can give us?
Yeah, I do think it's important to end on a dose of hope. We are starting to see some leveling out and maybe even a slight decline in RSV cases across the country. And we're hoping to experience that soon here in Southwest Ohio, maybe even in Northeastern Ohio, we're seeing a leveling out of RSV. And so that will help tremendously. And I think the other dose of hope that we see in healthcare all the time is that I have felt so fortunate as a leader here at Cincinnati Children's to reach out to either primary care practices or even our adult healthcare partners and say, hey, anything you can do to help decompress our emergency room and urgent care volumes by seeing kids, expanding your hours, messaging the way Dr. Peltier does, that helps and makes such a difference. We really do come together as a community when we have to. I wish we didn't always have to, but we do, and we will do what it takes to meet the needs of the kids in this region.
One more thing I just want to clarify. Someone emailed us. They thought they heard you say, Dr. Peltier, that strep throat could be cured with antibiotics in 24 hours. I don't think that's the way I heard it, but I wanted to give you an opportunity. The emailer is saying, hey, you should take all your antibiotics. Is that, can you clarify
correct.
That
so
for
let me clarify that. Yep. Thanks, Lucy. So good point. You would take all 10 days of your antibiotics because we want to make sure. But essentially, within 24 hours, most of the symptoms are gone, and we allow children to return to school as long as they're fever-free. And probably 99% of the cases, fever and symptoms have improved to the point where children can go to school. So thank you for that clarification. I should said that symptoms are improved enough that they can go back to school. Of course, we want you to take your full course of antibiotics. Thank you.
Great. Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center Chief of Staff, Dr. Patty Manning, and American Academy of Pediatrics Ohio Chapter President, Dr. Chris Peltier of Pediatric Associates of Mount Carmel. Thank you both so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, we'll hear about how a Greater Cincinnati Charitable Pharmacy is looking to expand outside the urban core. This is Cincinnati Edition.